If somebody asked me, what's the chance of World War III? I'd say 98%. I wouldn't put 100% probability on the sun rising tomorrow.
Okay.
But Martin Armstrong, who happens to be a very bright guy, says his computer says 100% chance of World War III. It could start in Ukraine. It could start in Israel. But I think there's an excellent chance of it happening when the financial market collapses. You're going to see a lot of panic among world leaders, and you're going to see some really scary things. We're going to go into a very bad time. And the funny thing is, a lot of very bright people are telling people this today. Ray Dalio's been saying it. Jim Rogers been saying it. These guys all understand that this isn't rocket science.
Bob Moriarty, how are you?
Good day, Andy. Been too long.
It's been too long. I've been traveling. I was traveling a bit, but I'm back in the office here and watching everything as you are. You have more in-depth analysis, but watching everything unfold. Off camera, you just said, boy, the Chinese saying, the curse, may you live in interesting times, and boy, do we. Let's start working all that out. Let's talk about what happened over the weekend on Friday. Give me your point of view.
Well, here's the most important thing. One of the biggest problems with both Europe and the United States is nobody bothered to listen to Putin and Lavrov. Now, you don't have to agree with me on how I feel politically, but quite bluntly, Putin and Lavrov are rational players. They speak simply. They speak plainly. They're not coked up like some of the other players in this particular circus. And they've said, okay, we want this, and we want this, and we want this, and we want this. And all of those are reasonable expectations. So for 3.5 years, this war has been going on. I see estimates that the Ukraine has lost somewhere between 1.2 and 1.5 million soldiers killed, which I think is a terrible tragedy. However, it was a war that should have never taken place in the first place. Now, you know me, I'd like to ask a trick question. Is Russia the enemy of the United States?
If you're asking me, I'd say no.
Okay, what the fuck are we going to war with Russia, and it is a war with the United States using as a proxy Ukraine against Russia? Okay, how do we win? And the answer is you can't. And those chihuahuas who run most of the nations in the EU and NATO are just absolutely staggering people. So, for the very first time, somebody was willing to sit down and listen to Putin. Now, whether Trump actually does something positive or not is a question. When I think of Donald Trump and what he's going to do next, I think of fishing. Have you ever fished?
I have, a lot.
Okay. Did you know that fish can break dance?
I did not know that.
Okay, the next time you go fishing and you catch a fish, take him off the hook and put him down on the ground. Okay, and he will break dance for you. Okay, Donald Trump does exactly the same thing, except Donald Trump flops a lot more than any fish doing a break dance.
Okay, let's work that out. What happened?
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Okay, Donald Trump's told Zelensky, okay, show up at the White House, and this time you need to be wearing a suit. The problem with Zelensky's stupid, okay? And we know that because he showed up at the White House wearing a suit. But if you notice, everybody else that was wearing a suit was wearing a tie. But Trump didn't tell him to wear a tie. He told him to wear a suit. So Zelensky obeyed Trump, okay, and gave him a giant finger at the same time. But he had a meeting with Zelensky, and then the seven dwarfs showed up, okay? And they were going to run a boo game on Donald Trump. They were going to overwhelm him with their brilliance. But I just read something shortly before this piece where the entire seven dwarfs and Snow White and Trump were lined up together. And it was a magnificent picture because if you look at the faces of the dwarfs, okay, these idiots running the countries in NATO and the EU, they all looked as if they were constipated. So I don't know what Donald Trump told them, but he did not tell them something that made them happy. So my prediction is going to be, I don't think there's going to be any change. There is absolutely not going to be a ceasefire. The United States has come out today and said there would be no U.S. forces in a security guarantee, which is obvious because there's no way in hell the Russians would put up with that. And in 2 or 3 months, the Ukrainians are going to be steamrolled and the seven dwarfs and Snow White could figure out for themselves they lost the war.
Yes. Yes. And so really my question is, well, and maybe it's not really a question, but it's Ukraine it's over without any U.S. involvement.
No, it's no. Over with or without. Okay, yes. Here's what nobody realizes. Let's go back to February, early March of 2022. You remember when there was a 40-kilometer train of Russian forces that were to the west of Kiev, and there was a line literally 40 kilometers long of tanks and APCs and support vehicles?
Yeah.
What the Russians did is they sent a minuscule force. It was like 100,000 troops total with these APCs and these tanks, and they threatened Kiev. What was Kiev's reaction? We're talking early March of 2022, and that's something very few people talk about, but it's important. What was Kiev's reaction?
Tell me.
They went to Turkey, to Istanbul, and they signed a peace agreement where they were going to actually abide by the Minsk II agreement, okay? And then Boris Johnson goes to Zelensky and says, hey, look, here's the deal, pal. You could steal a lot more if you'll continue fighting. Now, Zelensky, like Trump, is a draft dodger. He got sent 3 draft notices in 2019. Do you remember what his occupation was?
Yeah, he was a comedian and a movie star.
Okay, and what was his biggest skill? This is important.
Telling jokes.
No, it's worse than that. He could play the piano with his dick. Okay, those were Zelensky's qualification to be president of Ukraine. So he was elected, and I will concede it was more or less a fair election. Now, of course, the United States scored a coup d'etat in 2014 and overthrew the democratically elected government of Ukraine. Now, all these people talking about Russia started the war, Russia didn't start the war, the United States did. Okay. That goes back to 1990 when the United States put in writing, when they were talking with the USSR about the reunification of Germany, they put in writing that they would not expand NATO one inch to the east. And of course, that was 16 countries ago. So does Russia believe anything the United States says? No. Does Russia believe anything that Ukraine says? No. They don't believe anything France says. They don't believe anything Germany says, because they have been lied to consistently. However, the truth is they actually won the war back in March of 2022, and Ukraine kept fighting. Okay, and it's been an incredible war. I was in Vietnam as a fighter pilot and a forward air controller, and the change in warfare is absolutely staggering to me. What was the effective role of battleships after Pearl Harbor?
It was more or less, what was the effective role afterwards? I mean, you could still use them, and as far as intimidation. But yeah.
Even better, there's a much better use for them.
Tell me.
They made the most wonderful fishing weights. Absolutely wonderful. Okay, you had these fishing weights with 16-inch guns. The devastation at Pearl Harbor,
yeah,
the battleship was past its sell-by date. So every war introduces certain weapons. Civil War introduced machine guns. It introduced submarines. World War I introduced the airplane. World War II introduced carriers. And this war has introduced drones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a forward air controller, I was flying this little tiny single-engine Cessna, the smallest airplane the military used in combat, and I was going out looking for targets. And when I found a target, I would call it an airstrike or an artillery mission on it. We had the most number of casualties per flight hour of any aircraft in Vietnam, and we lost more airplanes than any other aircraft in Vietnam. But on the good side, we got more medals than anybody else did. The drones have replaced me for $1,000, okay?
Right.
You can now take out a $10 million tank with a $5,000 drone. Iran has proven with Israel is you can defeat an entire, let me think of what the best term for it, air defense system with a bunch of cheap drones, okay? Now, if you're firing $5,000 drones or even $50,000 drones at Israel, okay, and they're firing $2 million missiles to shoot down the drone, you just lost the war. But what's really scary, and this is scary, and to the best of my knowledge, nobody has talked about it, the original drones were controlled through radio waves, okay? Now they have drones that are fly-by-wire, okay, which is tremendous improvement. And they also have drones that can use AI. So the battleships of today are aircraft carriers, and the very best thing to do is to paint a big circle right in the center of the deck, okay, so the drone knows where to hit the aircraft carrier. Tanks, $10 million, you can turn them into toast for $5,000. APCs, same thing. And some of the things they're doing are so bizarre to me, given the fact that I was in combat. I remember in the 1950s reading something in Life magazine, and it took something like 250,000 bullets to kill an enemy soldier, okay, which seemed absolutely amazing to me. until I actually got to Vietnam, and then I realized everybody's shooting at everybody all of the time. So 250,000 bullets is not a lot. However, now you've got these drones that are $1,000 a piece, and they've got effectively hand grenades, and they go out and they find somebody and they drop a hand grenade on. I go, holy cow. Okay, the nature of warfare has changed. But the scary thing is, and none of these dwarfs in Europe has thought about this yet, you cannot defend against drones, okay? Israel couldn't do it. Ukraine couldn't do it. The United States couldn't do it. I grew up in Texas, and we had a saying, and it was, an armed society is a polite society. When these dwarfs realize that any group, okay, with access to $1,000 or $5,000 drones can assassinate any dwarf, the rules of warfare just change, okay? Right. And it's going to be interesting to see, because we haven't seen this yet, but we're going to. There is no way to defend against these drones. You've got these little tiny drones. I mean, have you seen, there's this demonstration on YouTube. There's a little tiny drone that has 1 gram of C4 in it. And they can train the drone to go after a specific face. And the drone lands on the guy's head and blows the 1 gram. That's scary, okay? Mm-hmm. We are going to have a polite society in the future because there is no other alternative.
Yeah. No, it is scary. And that is scary. Well, work out to me again what agreement. It looks like Putin, and I'm saying this agnostically, I don't have a dog in this fight, and I agree with just about everything you said. It's just not our war. But it was always somewhat funny is the wrong word, but I'll use the word funny to me, that Ukraine and the West thought they could dictate terms in this war.
Oh, that's absolutely hilarious. Okay. They walked into a high stakes poker game and they have no cards.
Yeah.
What's Trump going to do? There's some kind of absurd number. I think there have been 23,000 sanctions against Russia. Okay. Now, not for a minute am I going to tell you that Russia is prospering. It's an expensive war. All wars are expensive. The inflation rate and the cost of living is going up in Russia. They're paying price. But the real price was Ukraine. It's had 8-10 million people displaced, had 1.2 to 1.5 million young soldiers killed. Ukraine has been destroyed. So these dwarfs, these chihuahuas, who think they run Europe, come to Washington, they want to play high-stake poker. And somebody needed to point out to them, they haven't got any cards. They haven't got anything to offer. Now, it is to the point, I will concede, Putin would like to have peace, okay? Because it's gotten to be an expensive war for the Russians. But Putin would like to have good economic terms with Europe and with the United States. And it was the United States and Europe that attacked Russia, not Russia attacking them. The possibility exists that we could have some adult leadership, but I don't see any adult leadership in the West today. I see the debt-based system of the West is the same as Rome was in the year 300 or 400 AD. And the debt-based system of the West is in a position of collapse. And the sooner it collapses, quite likely the better. And I don't throw this in. We're going to have a momentous financial collapse between now and October.
Okay. Work that out for me. Why October?
Well, markets love to crash in October.
Yeah, right? So you kind of got me by surprise, not about the collapse, but just the direction, but it fits really well with this conversation. Markets do collapse, and that's what a lot of people don't they realize, but they don't think about it. They talk about a collapse in the springtime or the summertime, and I'm always thinking that's not when markets crash. Markets crash in the fall. Right?
Right.
Yeah. And you have a lot of things leading up to that, potentially leading up to that. And I'm not going to say that that's set in stone. That's what's going to happen. But you have a lot of things.
No, it is set in stone.
Well, look, work that out for me then. Why is that set in stone?
Not a maybe. The economic underpinnings of the world's financial system, and here I'm really talking about the debt-based system of the West, it's in bad shape. The bond market has collapsed in Japan. It's collapsed in the United States. Bitcoin and the 15,000 derivatives are at record high prices. The Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ are all at record high prices. The markets are more overblown than they have ever been before. Now, here's one thing people don't understand about avalanches. How many snowflakes does it take to cause an avalanche?
One at a time, just one, I guess.
One.
That's one.
One. Okay. Now, the conditions have to be right. You have to have the right humidity. You have the right amount of snow. You have to have the right temperature. You have to have all of the conditions in place. But when the avalanche starts, it takes one snowflake. Okay. And we are one snowflake away from a collapse of the debt-based system of the West. The United States has $37 trillion in debt. Now, how old are you?
I'm 51.
Okay. Are you old enough to remember when Trump was running for president and he was going to lower spending?
Yes.
Okay. And what has he done now that he's taken office? Well, he increased the DOD budget by 13%. Didn't we elect you because you were going to lower prices? Absolutely not. To the extent that I think Trump has blown his administration between the Epstein scandal, which he clearly was involved in and doesn't want to admit, and this fiasco with Ukraine, things are about to get really ugly really quick. And all of the underpinnings of the world's financial system are extremely unstable right now. Everything is in position. We're just waiting for that one snowflake.
So I've had three high-profile guests on in the last week. And you know them. One of them is our friend Dave Cullum. And they all have said something similar, not so much on the timing, but they've all said, Steve Hanke was another, and Professor Steve Hanke, and they all have said the bubble meter has never been bigger. Never been bigger. And Dave made a very interesting point. He goes, it goes on forever, never stopping.
I love Dave Cullum.
He gave me a shout out in that interview, by the way. He gave you a shout out in that interview, by the way. I'll send it to you.
He gave me one?
Yeah, he said he was talking to Bob Moriarty. I'll send it to you.
Well, here's what's funny. Okay. Dave Cullum comes out with his year in review.
Yeah.
We're actually the first people to publish that in 2009. And of course, he was nobody, which is fine because we were nobody too.
No,
So,
you were somebody. I was reading you. Yeah, go ahead.
we published it. And then in 2010 and beyond, he was published on Peak Prosperity. And I like Peak Prosperity, nice people. I don't give a damn where he publishes it because we always link to it anyway. But Dave Cullum effectively writes a diary, okay? And he talks about all the bullshit that goes on in a particular year. It's the most amazing reading I've ever seen. So I went to him a couple of years ago and I said, you know, Dave, you're fucked up. He said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you're doing this and you're putting it on the web, and somebody has to sit there for 3 or 4 hours to read the damn thing. And that should be in a book. And he said, okay. And I said, tell you what I'm gonna do. I like it so much that you send me all your crap and I'm gonna put it in a book and I'm gonna have my editor edit it, and I'll do the cover, I'll get everything. You make all the money, okay? And I think the books are so good that I want to see this done. And we've done about 7 or 8 books. I think we have 3 or 4 still left to do. But Dave Cullum is somebody who's going to be like, God, who wrote Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire?
I know what you're talking about.
Gibbons,
Yeah.
okay. His writing is so good. I wish, well, actually, I hate him. He's the only guy who's clearly funnier than I am. Okay. He really is a hoot. And I just have a lot of admiration for him. But I want to point something out. Okay. You, in essence, just said, look, you know, you're not the Lone Ranger, and there's 3 or 4 other people, all of whom are highly more qualified than you are, saying the same thing. Do you realize that 30 years ago, or 40 years ago, or 100 years ago, those people existed, but they had no voice? Okay. This is going to be one of the most predicted collapses in history because we've got a lot of very intelligent people today who have a voice. Anybody who's worth listening to has the ability to communicate. And obviously, the more interesting you are and the more qualified you are, the more successful you'll be. But I'm going to tell you, if the average investor is not headed for the bunker right now, they're being stupid. We have bad times coming. There is absolutely no possible alternative. And some of the smartest guys say no. Do you interview Martin Armstrong?
I just had him on Monday of this week.
Okay,
No, it was last week.
his computer system, what is the percentage prediction for World War III?
It's about 100%.
No, it's not about 100%. It is 100%.
Yeah. I'll send you the interview. We just had him on. Yep.
If somebody asked me what's the chance of World War III, I'd say 98%. I wouldn't put 100% probability on the sun rising tomorrow. Okay. But Martin Armstrong, who happens to be a very bright guy, says his computer says 100% chance of World War III. It could start in Ukraine, it could start in Israel, but I think there's an excellent chance of it happening when the financial market collapses, you're going to see a lot of panic among world leaders, and you're going to see some really scary things. We're going to go into a very bad time. And the funny thing is, a lot of very bright people are telling people this today. Ray Dalio's been saying it. Jim Rogers been saying it. These guys all understand that this isn't rocket science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they all are. And I talk with all of them. I have great conversations actually with all of them, with you, and you're in that group. I would add you, absolutely add you in that group. Why though, work it out for me though, why in October? Why now? Yeah. Work that out for me. You said the bond market is imploding in Japan.
Well, it's imploding in the United States too.
It's imploding.
Do you need
the money?
Pardon?
The whole system is seizing up. The whole financial system is seizing up. The money flow is seizing up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, here's what's crazy. And you have to spend a lot of time on the internet to realize that there's a ton of information. I'm not saying we're going to go into a recession / depression. We're in it now. All you have to do is look around and you're going to realize, hey, wait a minute, we got big problems. This thing with the United States being $37 trillion in debt. And I believe the increase in the debt is going to be $2 or $3 trillion just this year. The debt in the United States just totally, utterly out of control. And the world, I see it, of course, I'm in Europe, and I can drive through villages and see all these shops that are shutting down, okay? Europe is collapsing. They're collapsing because those stupid goddamn sanctions that they voted for. And I wrote a piece in early March 2022 and said that Europe just committed financial suicide. And they did commit financial suicide. And it's so stupid. How long would it take Germany to reopen Nord Stream?
How long would it take them?
Yeah.
Tell me.
One day.
One day.
One day.
So they're doing this to themselves.
No. Okay. There were four pipes. How many did the U.S. blow up? Three.
Got it.
There is a Nord Stream pipeline. Germany could open the valves. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they could have cheap natural gas tomorrow. The crazy thing is that Donald Trump won election saying he could end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. Now, was that realistic?
No.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely.
Okay. You call up Zelensky, say, hey, pal, take the $50 million a month that you're shipping to the UAE. Right. Okay. And we'll give you a free transportation. Okay. And enjoy the rest of your life. Now, CBS News announced a month ago that Zelensky's shipping $50 million a month to his personal accounts in the UAE. I mean, NATO and the United States and these dwarfs, these chihuahuas from Europe, are supporting the most corrupt country in the world. Okay. Mm-hmm. For what? Okay. Because you want to destroy Russia? Napoleon went to Russia in 1812 with 1 million soldiers. Okay. Came back with 100,000 soldiers. Okay. Adolf Hitler did the same thing in 1941. Didn't work out all that well. You're not going to defeat Russia. It's not going to happen. So, we have interesting times ahead of us. But you want to end the war in Ukraine? Call up Zelensky. Tell him, hey, pal, the war is over. You want to end the carnage and the genocide in Gaza? call up Bibi Netanyahu saying, okay, we're not going to finance genocide anymore. The crazy thing is, were you aware the Norwegians have a provision when they're voting for somebody for the Nobel Peace Prize? They've got a provision in their set of rules that says you cannot be financing a genocide and win the Nobel Peace Prize. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I just made it up.
You just made it up?
Yeah, but I thought it was pretty good.
What other triggers here do we have? We talked about the bond market, and it looks like they're trying to get the dollar much lower here now. Is that another trigger point here that would ignite just a flee out of equities, or just is that just because they need the money, I guess, to keep the economy going?
When you go outside at noon and it's totally dark and you look up and you see 1,000 black swans, which of them is going to take a crap the first?
It could be any of them.
The answer is, who cares?
Right. Yeah. So is this really why we've seen the strength of, and I'm asking because I know the answer, but I want you to answer it anyways. The strength in gold and really the strength in silver now. In the last really 12 months, I would say. And it's actually been the last 25 years, but it really started to move in the last 9 to 12 months.
Okay. Is there any truth to gold being suppressed? Any truth?
Sure.
No.
No? I'd say who cares though?
There is a guy in Australia who runs a website called Gold Charts or Us.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And he has literally thousands of charts. And he has a chart called Percentage Metals Increase. And he tracks gold, silver, platinum, copper, lead, zinc, and I think iron. So he's got like 7 or 8 or 9 different metals. Now then, if you go back all the way to 1900, and he's got charts for 1900, 1910, 1920, 1930, 1940, 1950, what commodity's gone up more than any other commodity of those metals being tracked?
I'm going to assume gold.
Of course. Okay. The absolutely insane thing. I bought gold in 1968, $35. It has gone up 100 times. Now, I'm going to tell you, no other metal has gone up 100 times. If you go to goldcharts.com, goldchartsrus.com, And he'll give you a free trial, 2 week or month long, something like that. And you look at this metals percentage growth, you can go to any time frame. Now, actually, if you compare the price of gold to postage stamps, to bread, to milk, to cars, to houses, to trophy wives, well, maybe not trophy wives, but you can compare it to anything, and it's gone up more, okay? It is a thermometer. I happen to think the price of gold at $3,500 is patently absurd. Unfortunately, nobody listens to me anyway, so it hovers. We've had a little bit of correction. It's down $100 or $150 or something like that. But is it a barometer? Is it a thermometer saying that the temperature is rising? Okay. It is absolutely saying something bad is about to happen. And the strange thing is, I see a lot of people who track COMEX and track the price of gold and silver in London. And there's a very real chance that there's going to be a total shortage of gold and silver. Okay. The central banks are loading up with gold and silver to meet demand, including Russia and China.
Yeah, I know. So where is this going to go? I mean, I don't know if that's a good question, but where is this going to go?
To understand the concept of entropy, I think define it. Okay. Please. When you have a rifle and you fire a bullet, when the bullet leaves the barrel, its behavior is exceptionally predictable. However, as time passes and the bullet travels downwind, its behavior becomes unstable and unpredictable. Entropy says that with time, everything becomes more unstable. And that's absolutely true. So we've got this situation. We're about to go into entropy of the world's financial system. And I believe, and I think we've just talked about it, there's a lot of intelligent people who can predict it's going to happen. I don't think anybody's smart enough to say where it's going to end. It's certainly not me.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how it ends either, other than everything is going to be changed or even remapped, if you would.
Well, let me throw something in that everybody is afraid to mention.
I'm taking notes, by the way.
Do you understand the term singularity?
I think so, but I want you to tell me.
Okay, it is that point at which computers become self-aware. Okay, computers learn to think. Now then, pretend we're 5 years, 10 years, 50 years in the future, and computers can think and act independently of humans. When computers look around at people like Zelensky and Macron and Starmer and Merz and Trump, what are the computers going to do?
take them over.
They're going to look at them the same way we look at ants, okay, and say, what do we need these idiots for? I say this, and I'm not saying this facetiously. Because of my age, I don't have a problem. Because of your age, you have a problem. Okay?
Yeah.
We're on the cusp of something very, very spooky. And quite bluntly, I'm kind of glad I'm not going to be around to see it.
I'm almost jealous, if that makes sense. Because I have to look through it. I have to live through it. So do you know who, you know Alex Craner, correct?
Yes.
Or you know, yeah.
I know of him, yeah.
Yeah. He is a great guest. I've had him on several times. And a really good friend. Becoming a good friend.
And absolutely brilliant. Okay.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah, absolutely right. And Tom Luongo, I'm assuming you know who he is as well. He's
who?
Become Tom Luongo, Gold's Gun.
Who?
Tom Luongo.
I know him. Of course I know him.
Yeah. So, again, he's become a really good friend of mine as well. And they have a thesis that I really bought into. And this kind of ties almost ties what you're talking about. That Russia, things are going to actually flow to Russia, meaning I had Tom on an interview 6 months ago, 9 months ago, when he talked about, well, Russia will be the guarantor of Europe. And how Germany, Alex talked about how Germany needs to go east and will go east to Russia as a partner. And what is your opinion on that? And it seems like that is kind of what's happening, starting to happen right now with this meeting and with what we just discussed, if you would. Russia has a lot of cards here over all of you.
All the cards. I mean, here's what's crazy. I have people who talk to me who are in the EU saying, look, we're very concerned financially and politically with what's going on. What should we do? And I tell them all exactly the same thing. They should go to Russia. Okay.
No.
50 years from now, if we're still around, okay, which is a big if, there's going to be no question. Lavrov and Putin are the finest leaders of the 21st century. And the strange thing is, if Germany wanted to literally rotate tomorrow, all it would take is a German leader to say, look, we don't need the United States, but we need Russia. We're going to go be nice to them. Here's what's totally insane to me. Is there any kind of rule that says you have to like your neighbor?
Not that I'm aware of.
You don't have to like your neighbor. You can hate your neighbor. Now, there are rules about burning their house down and shooting their dog, okay? But there's no rules that say you have to like your neighbor. Germany and Russia are neighbors. They have similar interests. They have nice, educated people. Why would you destroy your economy to get even with Russia? Are you nuts? Okay. And quite bluntly, the president of China, President Xi, same thing. He came out on July 15th and he said, BRICS is not trying to take over the world. We don't want to take over the world. We just don't want the world trying to destroy us. Russia gets it. China gets it. Iran gets it. Brazil gets it. And quite bluntly, the future belongs to BRICS. Absolutely. The debt-based system of the West has existed since 1492 when Columbus discovered the New World. And there was so much wealth, you know, you could go pick it up, okay? It made Spain the richest country in the world. There was one silver deposit in Bolivia called Potosí that they had 3 billion ounces of silver in this friggin' mountain, okay? And it made Spain the richest country in Europe. And, of course, Spain did the same thing the United States did and Britain did. They thought, hey, we've got all this money. Why don't we go out and start a bunch of stupid wars? When countries start fighting unnecessary wars, they bankrupt themselves. The United States bankrupt themselves. I find it exceptionally humorous that Donald Trump was elected on a platform of reducing government expenses. And quite bluntly, Russia is a better place to live in the United States. Donald Trump has now recognized there's so much crime in Washington, D.C., that he had to federalize the National Guard and the military. And of course, there's 400 million guns in the United States, and there's 335 million people. And when you're wearing a uniform, okay, in Washington, D.C., you just became a target, okay? That's not going to end well. we need some adult leadership, and quite bluntly, we're not getting it today. And it's certainly true of Europe. So if the adult leaders are in China and Russia, they're going to take over the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. It's interesting.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. Okay.
Yeah.
It runs in cycles. For 18 of the last 20 centuries, what two countries have led the world financially?
The U.S. and the U.K.?
No, 18 of 20 centuries.
Okay, 18 of 20 centuries. Got it. Well, Russia and China?
No, China and India.
China and India. Because they have the most people.
Well, they got the most people because they were the wealthiest, because they did the most trade.
Yeah. The Silk Road, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So where does, put in on our investor hat, where does gold stocks really fit in all of this? Would you not allocate any money to gold stocks, or would you still do that, but on a small level? Is there still deep value there? Should we even be value investing, or is it to just be button down the hatches?
Okay. In the year 2000, I read something that said that you should invest the percentage that you believe there will be a financial collapse in resources. Okay. If you think there's a 50% chance of there being a financial collapse, you should invest 50% of your assets into resources. So I invested 100%.
Good answer. So do I, actually. Good answer. Yeah. I would say put that with gold, silver, and the equities. And it's natural resource-based equities, if you would. So there's some diversification in there. So, well, moving forward here, you just made the comment 10 minutes ago, if there's 1,000 black swans, who cares which one shits first? But what is your expectation here? What's a conduit, if you would? And you just named several, but is there anything that you're thinking of that's really has you the most concerned, really, from now until October or until the end of the year?
There is a group that wants World War III. Russia understands it. China understands it. They know who the group is. And they're fighting against them. And I hope the group fails.
Well said. Well said. Well, we've gone on long enough. I guess we'll end there. I'd love to stick around after we leave here. I'd love to talk to you a little bit off camera. But yeah, if we'll end there, I'll link to everything that you have, and I'll get this right out to you, Bob. Bob Moriarty, 321 Gold. Thanks for your time.
Andy, it is always fun. We have some great conversations. I got to be candid. I mean, to the extent that, do I have the ability to spend hours a day watching brilliant people? And the answer is no, I don't. Okay. I have a very busy schedule, but you have some absolutely brilliant guys. And other than Dave Cullum trying to be funnier than me and succeeding, you've got some great guests, and you're doing something that's very good for people.
Well, coming from you, somebody I look up to, that means a lot to me. So I want to thank you, and to all of our viewers and listeners, and this is going to get a ton of views. Bob and I go way back, but it's through email, literally a couple of decades when you first started your site. And I would email you, post some of the stories or some of the articles. And this was a different time, different business. And you were the first one that did that for me. And I never forgot that. So thank you.
Yeah, actually, you've done that for a lot of people. And I have always felt like my job was to contribute to the success of everyone. And to the extent that we were the first people to post Dave Cullum. Okay. Yeah. We were smart enough to understand how good he was. But it gives me great pleasure. And I'll tell you something else. This could be very dangerous for me to say. If you took the 30 or 40 financial writers out there, the prognosticators, as it were, if you sent 30 emails to 30 different prognosticators, how many of them would even respond?
Let me answer that a couple ways. In my experience, and I get somebody on an interview, it's probably about 30%. Let me dial that back down. Everybody that I've found great value with that are decent people that I respect and I admire, it's probably close to 90%.
Strange enough, that is simply brilliant. And that is a measure that I hadn't thought about. If you want to see if a guy's honest, if you want to see if he's interested in your welfare, if he's actually contributing, so send him an email. Now, I get people who send me really nasty emails. And
me too. It
bother me. And believe me, I respond to them too. To the extent that, you know, if you think you're smart enough to offer advice to people, you ought to be willing to do it on an individual basis. And I have lots of time for people who write me, good or bad.
Yeah. No, it's been quite a journey, especially the last couple of years. And I figured that out. The people that are the decent, and it doesn't mean that people that don't respond to me are not decent. But the best people have been the most gracious. The Dave Cullums, the Tom Luongo, the Alex Craners have been the most gracious. The Bob Moriartys have been the most gracious to me and wanting to talk. And we just have a conversation. And it's just been enlightening and fantastic. So all of those people, go ahead.
You have put me into a very distinguished company, except for Dave.
I'm going to send him this interview. All right, my friend, stick around afterwards. Thank you so much.
Okay. For your-